This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are live from Union Square in Somerville. We have been looking forward to this show for months, our first broadcast from out in the field since before the pandemic. And what better place to do it than Union Square, a historic neighborhood that is also undergoing quite a bit of change, and it starts with the obvious. Union Square was the first brand new stop on the long-awaited Green Line extension that opened back in March, with other five new stops opening earlier this month. Too much excitement.
Big day for the Green Line extension. Passengers boarding the first train at Union Square Station this morning, one of six new stations bringing service into Somerville and eventually Medford.
The Green Line trolley rolled out of the brand new Union Square Station, the first new subway branch since 1987.
There are five more stops expected to open as part of the project.
It was a celebration decades in the making as Tufts students, transportation advocates, and Medford and Somerville residents squeezed into loaded trains around 4:45 this morning to catch a ride on the first trip on the Green Line Extension's Medford branch.
Sound there from WCVB and WBZ-TV. Communities around the new stations face incredible opportunities for growth, but also the risk of losing what makes them special. So that's the question. How do you develop a neighborhood and make sure everyone has a seat at the table? And that's what we're going to explore on the show here in Union Square today. And I want to start by really grounding us here in this neighborhood with a little more sound from the voices that make up Union Square, explaining what this neighborhood means to them.
What is Union Square to me?
Wow. Union Square is, you know, really the center of community for me.
I work in Union. Almost all my errands are done in Union. I meet up with friends for dinner and drinks in Union.
I go to the farmer's market they have on Saturdays.
We like to go out there a lot. We love Vera's. It's a restaurant in there. The record store there is great.
It's the most connected place that I've been a part of.
The traffic there is horrible. I walk from my house to there because if I drive there, it would take forever.
It has always been a really dynamic and vibrant neighborhood. You know, not to be dramatic about it, but I view Union Square as like a crossroads for Somerville.
Significa, pues, algo muy importante
para mí. The Union Square neighborhood represents something very important and special for me. It is close to my job and my home. My life is here.
It's my neighborhood. It's my home. It certainly is the geographic center of my universe.
So with that in mind, let's dive in. Here to help us kick off is Tom Galagani, Acting Executive Director of Somerville's Office of Strategic Planning and Community Development, and Greg Karczewski, President of US2, which is the developer behind the USQ project. Tom, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
And Greg, welcome.
Thank you.
So Tom, I'm going to start with you because you've worked with the city of Somerville for a long time. And this has been a long time coming, hasn't it?
It's been a long ride, that's for sure, to get to this point. It's you can really trace back the latest iteration of Union Square and the Green Line back to 1991, when the Conservation Law Foundation sued the state and identified the Green Line, as well as some other projects, as mitigation for the air pollution that the Central Artery Tunnel Project may create. So
being the
Big Dig. Yeah. And from that point forward, this community has been pushing forward and making sure that the Green Line is at the top of the agenda, not only as a community, but that the state would continue to pay attention to us and make sure that this investment, this massive investment, would actually happen.
So we are talking 31 years in the making.
True.
All right. And walk us through some of the major changes that Somerville has gone through in those 31 years.
Oh, in 31 years, it's been substantial change. I mean, back in the 1980s, going back even further, a big touch point is the opening of the Davis Square Red Line station and the extension of the Red Line all the way to Alewife. And that certainly changed the western side of the city tremendously. And from that, we had a taste of what transit and introducing transit and more transit opportunities for folks would mean to a neighborhood. The challenges and also the opportunities.
So, Greg, I'll turn to you now. And again, we are live in Union Square in Somerville here on Radio Boston, where we're exploring a conversation about how you develop and include community keep your character, but grow in new and exciting ways. So, Greg, I'm going to turn to you now. The Union Square Project, this USQ project, specifically started around 10 years ago, and you believed in it so much that you were willing to move here to be a part of it. So what made that worth upending your life to change the lives of a neighborhood halfway across the country?
That's right. It's been a tremendous opportunity to come here, you know, almost 8 years ago now, you know, put our office here right in the heart of Union Square and collaborate with the city and the community to really help them fulfill a vision that they had for the future of Union Square. And interestingly, that vision is grounded in the past. So back in the early 1900s, there were 80 streetcar trips from Union Square to to Boston and to Cambridge on a daily basis. And Union Square was Somerville's downtown. It was its commercial core. And thereafter, the highway came in, the trains got ripped out, and the economy here locally kind of struggled. And so the city's big vision and the big idea for the project that we're working on is to bring the Green Line back and to restore Union Square as Somerville's downtown, its commercial core. And so the work that we're doing as a community-based developer is really to fulfill that vision that the city has. We're bringing 2.7 million square feet of development back into the neighborhood across 17 acres. 1.7 million of that is going to be commercial spaces, so spaces for technology companies and life sciences companies and innovation and arts and creative economy. And then 1,000 new residential units, new open spaces, and new mobility options are all part of the program.
So, Tom Galligani of the City of Somerville, in a sentence, what's the vision for you?
The vision is to make Union Square the vital place it has been in the past and make sure that vitality continues in the future.
And Greg Krzyzewski, for you, what's the vision in a sentence?
The vision is really to create an employment center that includes opportunity for everyone. You know, people that live here today, as well as people that will be attracted to all the things that this neighborhood has to offer.
So let's take that phrase, right? Opportunity for everyone, and let's focus there. What does it take from the city's perspective, Tom, to create an environment where there's opportunity for everyone? What are the building blocks of that in an area where you've got new transportation, you want to attract new industry, you know it's going to affect prices, housing, that kind of thing? What are those building blocks?
Well, to start, you really need to think it through, and you need to really do some careful planning. And we've done that as a community. We've done that, the city has done that, in working with our partners and our community partners to really think about what Union Square and what the whole entire city is going to look like when we light up the Green Line and we create an opportunity where suddenly 85% of our residents will be within walking distance to rapid transit. That fundamentally changes what's possible in Somerville. And so we have to think carefully, and we've been doing that since the late aughts, really thinking about how this will affect our community and planning and being purposeful in trying to attract commercial development to increase that daytime population in our different employment areas and to build the kind of housing that we want, the affordable housing that we also want, to make sure that the residents that have grown up in Somerville have an opportunity to stay here.
And Greg, as an honest broker, right, between development and community, as a community members have engaged, and we'll come back to that, some process questions there in a minute, but as community members have engaged, what have you heard as both the hopes and fears that you are most beholden to pay attention to as a steward of this process?
Yeah, as a community-based developer, you know, a lot of the work that we do is working with members of the community from all different perspectives to understand their goals and hopes for the project and try to match those goals and hopes with the market realities, right? And try and find the nexus between those two things. And so we've worked with organizations throughout Somerville to think about, you know, how do we provide more affordable housing? This project is at its scale, providing 20% affordable housing, so 200 out of 1,000 units, which is really market-leading for the scale of the project. We signed the first community benefits agreement in the history of Somerville, so we worked with a local community group, separate from the city government, to negotiate an agreement that would identify hyper-local priorities that were important to community members.
What was the name of that community group?
It's the Union Square Neighborhood Council. And you know, they've been a partner and a collaborator throughout. And the goal has been to, you know, through that process, to identify workforce development initiatives. So how can we ensure that the people that are here benefit from not only the construction, but the future jobs that are created? How do we support and buoy the arts in the neighborhood? How do we continue to support small businesses, which are the lifeline of this community and important part of the community? And so we've developed programs and approaches to supporting those various groups as benefits that are going to come out of the work that we're doing here.
Here in Union Square, live on Radio Boston, talking with Greg Karcheski, president of US2, which is the development that's happening around the new Green Line extension stop here, and Tom Galligani, who's acting executive director of Somerville's Office of Strategic Planning and Community of Development. We talked to lots of people in preparation for today, and one of them is Ethan Dussault, who's the head engineer and co-operator of New Alliance Audio Studio here in Union Square. One of the things that he talked about is the demand it puts on residents to be a part of a process like this.
People are trying to live their lives, and then they're supposed to also go and translate the Somerville website, watch all the YouTube videos of all the city councilor meetings. It's like, these are essentially full-time jobs, right? And the thing is that the development community has a staff of full-timers who do this full-time, whereas residents don't have any extra hours in the day to do this stuff. So it can be daunting in terms of feeling like you can make a change.
And Tom, I'm chuckling to myself because, of course, we're here live and there are people watching us do this radio show. And I just saw a whole bunch of eyes look up to the ceiling and a bunch of tired nods, right, from people here. How do you strike that balance? It can be like a full-time job to try to help, as a community member, guide a ship that is going to guide your life, like it or not, pretty substantially. So what are the challenges there, and how do you try to get that right?
This is an enormous challenge. How do we capture all the voices and make sure that we're listening and we're really listening to what people have to say? And that in itself is an exhaustive process. As planners, we're trained to do this and to host public meetings and to do the kind of thoughtful engagement that will really give us the real scoop of what people are thinking about. But we recognize that when we do that, we're capturing oftentimes maybe 5 to 10%, if we're lucky, of the population. Most of the majority of folks are living their lives. They're maybe worried about things, or they're concerned, or they're excited about the opportunities, but we usually typically just hear from the folks that have the time, are focused on this issue, and so we gotta go even more, we have to be even more ambitious, and that's really the story of this Union Square redevelopment. We've gone through many, many phases of listening to folks in different formats, and sometimes we hear things that we don't want to hear, which is, you're not
like
listening
what?
Enough. You're not listening enough. You got to go back. You have to think, you got to talk to us even more and reach out to other groups and these other groups, which is certainly part of the process. But in Union Square, because of the concern people have about the pace of change, we've had many chances created many opportunities to re-engage with folks.
So, Greg, were there times when you weren't listening enough, and how did you fix it?
You know, we always try to be an active listener here in the community, but, you know, certainly there are a lot of different voices, and we've worked hard to try and find different avenues and opportunities to engage with folks, whether it's, you know, being at the farmer's market on a Saturday or having someone knock on our window here in the square and kind of poke their head in and bringing them into this space and describe what we're doing, or regular engagement with key stakeholders in the neighborhood like Union Square Main Streets or the Union Square Neighborhood Council to understand what are the issues that are important to them, because it's, you know, to Tom's point, it's constantly evolving, right? It's all evolving, and so it's that ongoing dialogue that's important to continue the process.
All right, so Greg, I'll stay with you for a second. My last question to you for now, and then Tom, heads up, you're getting the same question. So Greg, what have you learned most from this process, and what do you feel most beholden to going forward?
Yeah, I think what I learned most from the process is, you know, and it's been a very active, engaged process over a number of years. And what I learned most, I think, is that collaboration yields a better result in the end, right? You know, there'll be times when we all don't agree, but that hard work to get to a result that finds the right balance between all the different factors at play, I think ends up, you know, resulting in a better end product. And so, you know, that's my takeaway from the process, I would say.
So, Tom, same question to you. Biggest lesson you've learned, and what you feel most beholden to going forward?
Well, the real lesson is you need to listen. I was looking back in preparation for this and looking back at my notes from back in 2016 when we had a whole community advisory committee process of filtering through voices. And what we heard is you need to keep listening. And you haven't met the expectations that this community has. And so we went back again and had another process, a whole different process with many of the same people, but with new people. But you always just have to keep listening because those voices are going to change, especially in a community like Somerville where 60% of the population are renters. And so there's some turnover that you might not have in the leafy suburbs. So even if you get to consensus, 2 years later, you might realize the consensus isn't quite there because there are new people. There are new players at the table. There are new interested people. So it's a constant process. It really never ends.
All right. Tom Galligani is Acting Executive Director of Somerville's Office of Strategic Planning and Community Development. Greg Karcheski is President of UAS2, which is the developer behind the USQ project. I want to thank you both. We're going to bring you back towards the end of the show when we're going to try to open this up to questions from people who are here in the building. But in the meantime, Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
And Greg, thanks.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Yep. So listen, if you have questions here in the room, put them on the index cards. Get them to Chris and Andrea. For listeners at home, stay with us as well. When we return, we're going to talk to local residents, business owners, community organizers. Get that perspective as we learn how to develop and build community with consensus from Union Square live in Somerville. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston. You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are broadcasting live from Union Square today. So excited to be out in the field for the first time since before the pandemic. And we're here on this special hour talking about developing consensus around developing our communities. And Union Square, which has a massive project going on, is a great place to learn from, especially with the opening of the Green Line extension. So, our next panel is made up of local business owners and residents, and I want to introduce them now. Jess Willis is the owner and operator of The Independent and Vera's, that are restaurants in the neighborhood. Jess, welcome.
Thank you.
Jen Palacio, owner and designer of the Tiny Turns Papery Stationery Shop. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you. And Nicole Eigbritt, Director of Community Organizing for the Community Action Agency of Somerville. Nicole.
Great to be here.
All our participants in Somerville, active residents as well. And I'm going to start with a little experiment here. We're going to try one word answers just for this question. The development process has been blank. Nicole.
Challenging.
The development process has been, Jen?
Complicated.
And the development process, Jess, has been?
It's hard to put it into one word.
So challenging and complicated.
Challenging
then.
And complicated, but also exciting. And,
yeah.
You know.
So, and Jess, I'm going to have you move your mic just a little bit closer to your mouth so we can hear you a little bit better. What's been most exciting about it?
It's been exciting to look at what is in store. It's something that we've been waiting for a long time. The Independent and Vera's have been businesses operating in Union Square for over 20 years now. So the prospect of the end result of this development, of a more vibrant neighborhood and, more daytime foot traffic and all of that is exciting.
So, you know, you're sitting right in front of a massive, what are these called? It's kind of like a diorama, right? Is that what you would call it? And somewhere in there is a gray building that is the Independent, and then we see the white buildings that are the things that are coming under development. When you look at that, and of course I picked you first and you're sitting with your back to it, but you've seen it before.
I've seen it.
When you look at it and you imagine how that's going to play out, what do you imagine happens in your gray building when those white buildings are done?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball, which I knew. I know what I hope happens. I hope that, you know, a lot of the character of the community remains. I hope that my employees can still afford to live in Somerville. I hope that, you know, that the neighborhood doesn't, that the transformation is mostly a positive without taking away the things that we value.
So interesting, Jess. Jen, I'll turn to you here, because I think if one listens carefully to Jess, one hears hope and worry all rolled up in that same set, right? I hope often is also I worry. So let me just ask you a couple of questions. First, that character of Union Square that Jess hopes holds, for you as a business owner, what is that character?
So I think the character is made up of our community members, and the store that I have represents a lot of independent artists, and a lot of them were originally Somerville artists, and I've had to change that to Somerville alum as the development has moved on because they can no longer afford to live here. And I think there's a lot of wonderful things about the new energy and new people that are coming in that have helped support. My business is very young, so I'm in a little bit opposite of Jess. I don't know that my business would exist if it wasn't for new development. But I do worry and also have the hopeful optimism that we'll be able to continually build upon what we know is important and what we value in the community and keep that here while inviting new people to enjoy what we love about the area.
So it's interesting that you brought up the artists. Earlier in the conversation, we played a little sound from Ethan Dussault, who's the head engineer and co-operator of New Alliance Audio Studio here in Union Square. He talked to us about, you know, some big challenges, more cost, limited space. He said he's not convinced that the new space is even equal to what's been lost, let alone more. But he also talked about the challenges of having artists at the table.
I think the city wants artists involved in the conversation. And for the longest time, artists have been confused about their capacity to affect change on their own behalf when it comes to the conversation of development, fabrication, and art space and beyond.
So, Nicole, I'll turn to you. You work with a community action agency, and there is always that question about whether community members know, feel comfortable, and recognize their power in advocating in change that's going to affect their lives. So you talked about challenge here. How have you thought about that, and have residents felt their power in from your perspective?
Yeah, and just to give some context for listeners to understand, the residents that CAS works alongside. So we're a federal poverty agency, and most of the residents we're working with live at or below the federal poverty level. And so these are 200% of the FPL. If you're a four-person household, you're making $53,000 or less. If you're a single person, you're making less than $26,000, just for some context. And I think that has been really the crux of the issue here. You know, we heard earlier from residents who feel like it's a full-time job just to try to keep up with the planning process. And those are already residents, I think, who have the background, the awareness, the education, and the resources to be involved. Whereas the residents we're working with, really low-income, working class, many of whom are immigrants, they have no ability whatsoever to engage in these processes. And what we've observed is that these are also the residents who are being pushed out first. And so over the last decade of this development, you know, residents have really had to organize themselves and fight to secure a place at the table. So earlier we heard about the Union Square Neighborhood Council. That governing body emerged from residents who organized their own coalition called Union United. And that was because the city hadn't invited them initially to be part of the process. So that's kind of the struggle that's existed here through the development process.
What that makes me think of is Tom Galagani saying earlier, one of the lessons was we thought we were listening and we heard you weren't listening enough. We had to go back and do a second process and listen more, and that's really what we're talking about mm-hmm. here. So we are actually at the USQ headquarters here on Radio Boston in Union Square doing our first live broadcast since before the pandemic, and we are learning lessons of development, community, and consensus as Union Square seeks to go through a transformation without alteration of some core values and core community characters. So Nicole, you introduced us to a couple of the people that the Community Action Agency of Somerville has been working with. I want to play a little sound of the two of them, and then actually, Jess, I'm going to come to you after I play this sound. So first, we spoke with Rosa Pineda from El Salvador, a tenant on Tremont Street, steps from the new Union Square station. She's currently challenging a pending rent increase through the courts, but she told us if she's told to leave, she hasn't been able to find anything in her price range.
If we are told that we cannot stay in our apartment, I have no idea where we will go. I have been looking, but haven't found a place to rent. If they evicted me right now, I don't know where we would go.
So we also had a chance to speak with Livia Tadano, who's a Brazilian resident who's lived in the same apartment with her husband for 10 years in the Winter Hill neighborhood of Somerville, less than a 10-minute walk from one of the new Green Line Extension stations, Gilman Square in this case. She wanted to offer advice to folks like Rosa, who might find themselves in a similar situation.
They have to speak up because they're going to be heard. If a landlord comes with a non-renew lease letter and give it to you, speak up. Don't try to move out. You have your rights. Because the letter you say you have 30 days to move out. Don't freak out.
So Jess, you might be thinking, okay, why are you coming to me on this? But Nicole had laid out for us helping people take action for themselves. And I'm still having ringing in my head, you're both hope and worry about when everything's done, that the people who work for you, the people who want to come to your businesses, your restaurants, will still be able to be here. Does it put you in a strange position as a resident, a business owner, somebody who loves your community, to watch the potential for your profits go up and worry about the people you steward who work for you and help them stay active to keep themselves in place?
Sure, it's something that I'm like very keyed into. I think there are a lot of opportunities in the city right now for lower income residents to get involved with opportunities to buy housing, to become, you know, owners of, you know, condos and houses and things like that. And that's something that I've been really trying to connect my employees to make them aware of these opportunities. We've connected people to CAS in the past to deal with, you know, eviction.
Nicole's organization.
Yes. But yeah, absolutely. I worry every day about, you know, which manager is going to come to me next and say that they're moving to the suburbs because, you know, they're starting a family and want to buy a home and they can't do it.
Has
here
that
in
happened?
Somerville. It's happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
when happened. Was the last time it happened?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah. And Jen, has it happened for you with your business?
It hasn't happened for me yet, but it has happened with a lot of the partners that we work with. So a lot of, as I mentioned, some of the artists that used to be here in Somerville have had to move as far as Providence in order to be able to buy a home and establish that sort of stability.
Jess, one of the things that struck me in preparing for this conversation is the story of how you eventually became the owner and operator of the Independent and Vera's. You got lost in Union Square on the way to a job interview when this all started. Tell us that story.
Well, the way that I stumbled into Union Square was, I was actually looking for a place in Charlestown. and it wasn't a job interview. We were going out to dinner in Charlestown, and we got lost and ended up, if you know Union Square, you know that there's a road that kind of leads you into a municipal parking lot that looks like it may be a through street, but it's not. It's kind of a, when you get to the end, you're at the end. And the Independent is right there. That was the point where we kind of gave up on trying to find the place we were looking for in Charlestown, went into the Independent, and I immediately fell in love.
Eventually became a hostess, and now you own it. So, Nicole, I want to turn to that. I want to come back to this character thing, and I want to come back to the hopes and fears that we're hearing from Jess and Jen. One of the things, I think it was Tom who said it to us earlier in this conversation, was, you know, 200 affordable housing units out of 1,000. Maybe it was Greg who said it, you know, that's unprecedented, that's really exciting. Yes, and 200, right? So many people feeling the crunch, and not just in a gentrifying area, right? Housing is hard for everyone. Interest rates are hard, inflation, availability, but then, right? And we see all the buildings popping up, and we can see, if you imagine this, right, all those floors with little pretend windows will be people who live there, and not that raises rates. So is it even possible, in your mind, Nicole, to create that prosperity and maintain availability for the people who were the point in the first place in bringing a T-station to a place like Union Square, which is to enfranchise people who were disconnected and disenfranchised?
Right. I don't think there's a black and white answer, but I believe under the current system, the way affordable housing is developed, it's going to be extremely challenging, if not next to impossible. The residents, the clients that CAS has now, the hundreds of families, again, young families with children, immigrant families, these are the backbone of our community, right? The folks who are working in retail, restaurants, the laundry services, they're the ones being priced out. And the affordable housing that's being developed, again, like, is it truly affordable? So, a lot of the affordability is pinned to this area median income percentage, right? AMI.
AMI.
This is a HUD calculation that includes the entire Metro Boston region stretching up to New Hampshire. So for someone to be considered low income, making 80% of the AMI, a single person needs to be making $78,000. So even if those 200 new units are considered low income units, again, it's not fundamentally meeting the crisis. These are, you know, who's making $70,000 to $80,000 are folks with college degrees and working, you know, white collar jobs. Whereas, again, our restaurant workers and other folks in the community who are making under $50,000, there's just nothing left for them. And what CAS has really been focused on is trying to prevent further displacement from for residents living in privately owned rentals. And that's, you know, the stories of Rosa and Livia. They've been incredible in pushing back against predatory investors and developers.
Let's hear a little bit more of Livia Tadano's voice. She's the resident who's lived in the same apartment with her husband for 10 years. She said at first that she and her neighbors were excited about the Green Line extension and all the development it might bring until.
First, when we heard about the Green Line coming to Somerville, said, oh, that's great. But we never thought about our residents that live here for so long who have trouble paying rent because of the increase. And that's what they want us to, you know? He bought this house, he wants us out because he knows if he's like remodeling the house, he's gonna rent for, I don't know how much, but we increase a lot for him. And that's business, you know? But how about us who lives here for so long?
So that's the tension, right? Jess, therein lies the rub. Business people wanting to participate in the prosperity, saying, I have an opportunity here. I want more profit. I want to grow. I want to share in the wealth development. And those who don't have that in, right? So in your mind, is there a way to build the in and, as a business owner, as a resident, take advantage of new prosperity when development like this happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think business owners have a responsibility to help their employees navigate the changes that the neighborhood's going through, to help connect their employees to opportunities and to advocate for, you know, the growth and development and the things that their business needs, but also to advocate for the very real needs of the people, which is one of the things that their business needs.
And Jen, what do you think the business owner's responsibility is?
Well, I think the interesting thing about Union Square is that some of the business owners are the same people that are facing the challenges. We have a large number of immigrant-owned businesses here, and a lot of our small independent businesses are people who are helping their employees and their community. And Jess and I have been very involved with Union Square Main Streets in trying to help make sure that that voice is also heard in the table, that as the development continues, that those family-owned businesses and that small independent-owned places like the Independent Vera's, like my shop and all the other shops at Bow Market with me, can stay in the area and support our employees and try and figure out how to share that benefit of growth and share the resources that people don't have time to collate on their own.
All right. Jen Palacio is owner and designer of the Tiny Turns Papery Retail Store. Jess Willis is owner and operator of the Independent and Vera's restaurants in the neighborhood. And Nicole Eigbritt is director of community organizing for the Community Action Agency of Somerville. All three Somerville residents. We'll have some questions for you, but for now, thank you to the three of you for being part of the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So listen, hang tight, everyone. We will come back. And when we return, if you're here in the building, live in Union Square, you have an opportunity to submit questions. And we're going to bring the panelists back. We're going to have a live conversation with those questions and answers. Everyone, hang tight. I'm Tiziana Deering. You are listening to Radio Boston. You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are broadcasting live from the USQ headquarters in Somerville's Union Square. We've been having a fantastic conversation about what Union Square and the development here can teach us all about developing consensus and community while developing in this modern era. And the sort of the catalyst for a lot of this has been the Green Line Extension and its opening here in Union Square and on that line all the way up to Tufts and Medford. So listen, throughout the hour, we've heard perspectives from the city, the developer, residents, local business owners, community action agency, and now it's your turn. We have collected some questions from the audience here in the USQ headquarters for our panelists with an eye towards the future, and we're going to start asking those questions now. And listen, truth in advertising for everybody, including those listening at home. We have three headsets, five people we need to ask questions of, and you are going to hear some shuffling. And that's all right, because that's what we do when we're doing it live. So still here at the table right now, Tom Galligani, who's Acting Executive Director of Somerville's Office of Strategic Planning and Community Development, Greg Karcheski, who's the president of US2, which is the developer behind the USQ project, and right now, Nicole Eigbritt, who's the Director of Community Organizing for the Community Action Agency of Somerville and a Somerville resident. So a question for each of you, and Tom, I will start for you, and this comes from David Scott of Union Square Neighborhood Council, which we've heard about several times during the discussion today. Sorry, Tom. The community benefits agreement between USQ and the Union Square Neighborhood Council requires building affordable housing by the time the Green Line station opens. Ground has not been broken yet on the affordable housing. What is the holdup? People need this now. So, Tom.
Thanks for the question. We are working with our planning team and our staff internal to City Hall to try to figure out what the strategy is moving forward. We need to change some of the rules, some of the previous agreements that were signed 4 and 5 years ago, and we're trying to figure out the clear path to do that so that we can unlock this development proposal. Just to dive in a little deeper, back in 2017, when we contemplated this Greg's development, there was a hesitation to, people did not want to see the housing in the tower, let's say, pushed off to the periphery of his development into the neighborhood. Don't push all the affordable housing into the neighborhood. Make sure that there's housing integrated throughout the project. However, again, the whole point of keep listening, people have decided that they're interested in a 100% affordable housing project in the periphery. People now support that. The neighborhood is strongly in favor of that. And so it's going to require us to change the rules that we agreed to back in 2017.
Okay.
We're very close to doing that. And come January and February, we'll be in a position to chart what that clear path is.
Okay, so Nicole, Community Action Agency of Somerville, I'll turn to you next. What can residents do if they're worried about being priced out of Somerville?
Yeah, well, we're in the business of organizing residents. So particularly if you live in Somerville, we really encourage you to reach out to an organization like ours or simply just start talking to your neighbors. So our role as community organizers is to really educate tenants about their rights and help them work together to organize themselves and collectively demand for better. So in the case of Rosa and Livia, they have presented really tremendous courage in terms of working with their neighbors and then bringing their struggles to the public. And we have a really incredible community here in Somerville of neighbors who want to support each other. And so a few times now, we've hosted public demonstrations and rallies that say, hey, investors, developers, you know, you can't just come in here and evict tenants heedlessly to flip the building for profit. Like, we're going to demand that you come to the table with us and bargain a new and a more affordable lease or longer time to stay in the house. But unfortunately, we also recognize this as just kind of mitigating solutions. It's, you know, what you were saying earlier, that the affordable housing crisis is not just Somerville, right? This is a regional, statewide, and quite frankly, national issue. And that's the type of solutions that we need to be searching for.
And for listeners who may have just joined us, the Rosa and Livia reference that you made are two residents who are facing rent pressure and potentially eviction that we heard comments from them earlier in the conversation. So Greg Karczewski, I'll turn to you now, a first question for you. There is a model of the project here. You are now sitting with your back to it. We keep referring to the model to the person whose back is to it, with buildings of all different sizes. Is there a logic or rationale, or is it just spreading the impact?
Yes, it's a good question, and it was something that the scale of the project at various locations, and I should step back for a second and say that the project is 17 acres, and it's interspersed throughout the neighborhood, so it's seven different blocks that are around the Green Line station.
And feel free to point and describe as you're doing this.
And so as we went through the planning process with the community and the city over several years, there were a number of different things that were considered as we were thinking about where to place different uses and different scales. You can see from the model that a lot of the density, the taller story project portions of the project are near the new Green Line stop, right? So we wanted to put those uses closest to the Green Line stop, furthest away from the existing neighborhoods, and then sort of taper down as we got to the existing uses. The other thing that we're doing as part of the project, because there was a lot of conversation around how do we ensure that the growth that's happening feels more organic and fits in within the neighborhood. And so one of the things that we committed to do very early on was to work with a different architect on each building within the project. So we brought a different perspective to each different building to ensure that building sort of related to the scale around it, but also had its own unique character.
Okay, so what I'm going to do now is, again, we had five panelists throughout this conversation. We've just heard from Nicole, the Community Action Agency. We've heard from Tom from the city, Greg, who's part of the developer. We still have with us Jen and Jess, who are local business owners. Jen, I'm going to bring you over for a second. I'm just going to have you swap headsets with Greg. Go ahead and put this headset on, because I want to ask you a follow-up question, and you can even look at the model. So Greg just talked about sort of that integration. We had a question from an audience member earlier about where is the affordable housing coming? And Tom said, well, there's been some change in the desire of how that concentration works. What's really striking to me, Jen, when I look at this model, and one of the first things I did when I walked in the building was look for which building we're standing in right now, right? And you really can see this layout. One of those gray buildings is the one that you're in. When you look at this physical layout, the big white buildings that are soon to be developed, the brown ones that are kind of under construction now, does this feel like where you want to be? When you step back and look at it from the bird's eye view as a business owner, does it feel and look like where you want to be?
I have to say yes, because I wouldn't have chosen to be here and maintain through the pandemic and do all that sort of struggle to survive if I didn't like the general direction where it's going. What I love about it is what's staying as much as what's coming.
Yeah, so keep talking. I'm just trying to signal to Jess to come over here and join us as well. Keep going,
Jen. I think what makes me excited about it is the number of new people that will get to experience Somerville and get to be a part of what we're doing. And if I wasn't as engaged or wasn't feeling the support from the community that already exists and all the new people that have been continually coming in, I maybe would be more worried. But I think the opportunity and the ability for our business association and the different community members working together can really preserve what I love about the area, as well as provide opportunities for new people.
So just same question to you, as you look out over this landscape, and it really is remarkable to kind of be able to see, almost like you're up in a drone, right, what it's all going to look like. How do you feel about it, looking at that layout there?
I'll go back to the words that I used at the beginning of this conversation. I'm optimistically hopeful about it. I think the thing that I first fell in love with about this neighborhood is that you've got this village feel, right? You've got this hill here with everybody, you know, all the residents kind of living up here
in the front of the model,
in the center,
that's right,
with the tower, and everybody kind of, you know, can envision comes down the hill to, you know, get their coffee, go to restaurants, do business, ride the T into town. And I think that, to me, that's part of the charm and part of the character of this neighborhood. And I love that what's happening is we're creating more activity and more vibrancy down at the bottom of this hill. But, you know, this all still remains. And this, you know, the people who live here are what make this neighborhood what it is. And yeah, I get very excited looking at all the gray that's remaining.
For people who can't see this right now, and I know we're posting pictures, but for people who can't see this right now, the gray is the existing, right? And then the white is what's coming. All right, so as you give headsets back, Jess and Jen, I'll turn to you, Tom, for this last little bit of time that we have. Other communities are listening today because they know they either are or are going to face similar opportunities and challenges. If you could give a piece of advice, the most important piece of advice, and I'm guessing I already know what it is, but just in case, what would it be to other communities?
Well, most communities around the greater Boston area are facing the same challenges and looking at the same opportunities. And as a community, we do listen, and I've used that word multiple times, and I continue to listen, but you really need to start. And, you know, the old adage is the best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago, mm-hmm. and the second best time is today. Start planning. Start thinking about what kind of community you want to have, and really figure out what your goals, what your objectives are, what your core values are, and make sure that you're including everybody in that discussion. And then figure out what kind of community you want to create. It sounds a little trite, but actually, that upfront planning work really does make a difference in helping not only to save a project like the Green Line, which might have fallen apart 7 or 8 years ago, multiple different times, but it's also, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry. So you missed. I was like, Tom, I got you. Move on. Nicole, you got about 30 seconds.
Well, if I could just build on what Tom was saying, I also to make sure that equity is at the center of that planning. And I think this, again, is where we're seeing the crisis here in Somerville. Unfortunately, equity was not the driving vision early enough, and making sure that, like, you know, racial justice, immigrant justice, language justice are all incorporated into these processes are essential to making sure that similar displacement patterns don't happen elsewhere.
Okay, and Greg, about 15, 20 seconds for you.
In terms of
lessons
learned.
Yeah.
I think that the lesson for us as a developer working in the community is, you know, to invest in the community in a number of different ways, you know, by having our office here, by engaging with all different folks from around the neighborhood, whether it's Community Agent Action Agency of Somerville, or the Union Square Neighborhood Council, or Union Square Main Streets, to work with all the different perspectives and try and understand those perspectives and empathize with them, and see how we can, within the framework that we have, accomplish some of the goals that are important to the people that live here.
Okay, Greg Karczewski is president of US2, which is the developer. Tom Galligani, acting executive director of Somerville's Office of Strategic Planning and Community Development. Jess Willis, owner and operator of The Independent and Vera's. Jen Palacio, owner and designer of Tiny Turns Papery. Nicole Eigbritt, director of community organizing for the Community Action Agency of Somerville. Thanks to all of you. We had more questions that didn't get asked, I know, and I will pass them to the panelists afterward. So great to be at USQ headquarters today. We've got a little sound for you coming up, but for now, thanks for listening. On behalf of the whole team, this has been Radio Boston.
What is Union Square to me?
Wow. Union Square is, you know, really the center of community for me.
I work in Union. Almost all my errands are done in Union. I meet up with friends for dinner and drinks in Union.
I go to the farmer's market they have on Saturdays.
We like to go out there a lot. We love Vera's. There's a restaurant in there. The record store there is great.
It's the most connected place that I've been a part of.
The traffic there is horrible. I walk from my house to there because if I drive there, it would take forever.
It has always been a really dynamic and vibrant neighborhood. You know, not to be dramatic about it, but I view Union Square as like a crossroads for Somerville.
Significa, pues, algo muy importante
the
para
Union Square neighborhood represents something very important and special for me. It is close to my job and my home. My life is here.
It's my neighborhood. It's my home. It certainly is the geographic center of my universe.